For the last 4 years, you came to this podcast to get your needs met, to be fulfilled, to get a pro wrestling, pop culture, and that oh-so-naughty feeling tingled inside with a little bit of crass sprinkled on top. Now it's time for your hosts, Chad Allen, Shelly Allen, Zach Romero, and Luna Lynn. You are tuned in to the IndieCast.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome once again to the IndieCast. Chad Allen here with another Barbara Walters special episode. Yep, it's a Barbara Walters special. It's just me and a guest today. Today we have a very special guest with a very special event coming up here, one that we definitely want to bring up. Our friends at Absolute Intense Wrestling, AIW, have the yearly J-Lit tournament coming up on the way, and we have one of the people that is going to be part of that tournament in a very interesting first round battle that I'm sure we're going to be talking about shortly here. We have the absolutely fabulous, I would dare say, the Love Gun himself. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Magnum CK on with us. Magnum, welcome to the IndieCast.
Wow, what an introduction. I don't know if I can live up to all that, but I am quite literally, I was bouncing through that introduction. I was so excited.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for having me on, man.
Well, welcome to it. Now, Magnum, I don't know if you've ever listened to the show before, but we start every episode with five questions that we like to call the lightning round. You can answer as quickly or as long as you want, but normally these are the ways that we get rid of some of the really dumb podcast questions that come up on every single show you've ever been on, so we're going to get them out of the way right now.
I love that, because I do a lot of these. I'm very grateful I get to do a lot of these, but I think I've told everyone how I started in wrestling about 100 times, so this is a great idea.
So, yeah, and that's kind of why we do it, because I did notice you have been quite popular on the podcast scene, including with some, I saw some friends of ours, I think you've been on Wrestling Cheers recently, who are new podcast buddies of ours. You were on Kick Out at 2 recently, who's another sibling, show of ours. So, I'm glad to kind of continue the tour, as it were. So, well, here, let's get that quick question out of the way. You beat me to it. Who trained you, and when did you debut?
Well, I've had two debuts. I started originally at the end of 2004, and with my first actual match, tag match was my first. Everything else was battle royals and multi-mans and all that. But February 26, 2005 was my first match, but I started training earlier in 2004 in wrestling. And then I wrestled about 5 years. I'm trying to go quick for the lightning round. I went about 5 years and got out of the ring for a bit. There are different reasons we can get into that as much as you want. But then I re-debuted in the ring 2.5 years ago on my 30th birthday on April 9th, 2016.
Very nice. What is your first wrestling memory?
I grew up around wrestling. My uncle is a promoter and used to be a wrestler, so it's kind of ubiquitous to my entire life. But my first tangible memory was looking at a picture of the human wrecking machine Zeus getting smashed in the face by the Hulkster with a loaded purse.
A loaded purse. Oh God, was that the tag match with him and what was it? Him and Beefcake versus Savage and Zeus.
SummerSlam '89. I didn't get the pay per view. I was only 3 when it happened. But I got the WWF magazine that had the results.
I don't know if Zeus should be anybody's first wrestling memory, but that's okay. We'll go with it. Other than your own, who has the best robes in professional wrestling?
It's a toss-up for me between the 80s Macho Man, which is what I've kind of patterned some of my earlier designs off of, or at least the cut, the style, that the way it's cut out, because nobody really does that anymore. And, God, I always loved Ric Flair's stuff. It's hard to top Flair. But as far as capes go, you got to go with mid-80s Macho Man, the one he debuted with in the WWF on his debut match with the dragon, the stars on the front, I believe, and he had the kind of a Japanese feel on the back. Was amazing.
So, you know who I don't think gets a lot of credit some days is Rick Rude for some of his robes, too, but that's...
Well, he was one of my, Rick Rude was one of my first favorite wrestlers. And when I turned 18, the first thing I did is I went out and got a big fat anchor tattooed on my right arm for Rick Rude. And I was in the Battle Royal Gauntlet with, DJ Z was in it. And we both realized that we had Rick Rude tattoos at the same time.
It's Rick Rude Bros. It's like Eskimo Tattoo Brothers. It's really weird that way. So I have been notified that you have a theatrical background. So if you could have tickets to, let's pretend we've got a time machine here. If you're a real geek, the TARDIS is here. If you're more of an 80s geek, we have the DeLorean here. You can go to any Broadway show ever. We've got free tickets for you. What show are you going to see?
Oh God, that's such a terribly hard question. I would love to see, this is a lame answer, I would love to go back and see the original cast of Phantom of the Opera, because it's been such a huge show just throughout theater history. But if I can, my number one pick, because my absolute favorite show of all time is the Rocky Horror Show. And it was the first musical I ever did, actually. But it's where I met my wife, and show that means a lot to me. I've always loved the movie, and I've always loved the show. I would go back. I would love to see the London cast, the original cast, the crappy little piano in the corner of the room. I would love to see the original cast of Rocky Horror Show.
Okay, and I've got about three things that I'm going to have to circle back through once we get out of the lightning round here. But final lightning round question, the important one, normally especially to my wife, Shelley, Marvel or DC, and why?
Okay, well, growing up, I was originally a DC kid. I always loved Batman. And then around the late 90s, they did Marvel Heroes Reborn. I think it was like 97, 98, something like that. And then I got crazy into Marvel, and I kind of never looked back. The only DC titles I kept up with is I kept up with JLA a little bit. They did the Rock of Ages storyline. I did some of that. But Batman is about it. It's about as far as I go on DC. Now, with that being said, these days with trade paperbacks and all that, I will occasionally find a nice DC title. But Marvel is just king of the mountain. You can't beat it. It's my favorite by far.
Have you seen the most recent movie?
The Avengers?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you know, I loved it. I was way behind because these superhero movies come out, and I feel like it's so hard to get to the movies these days for me. I caught up. I watched, like, the Thor Ragnarok, and I loved it. And I have not seen the Guardians of the Galaxy yet, but I watched the Civil War and all that the week leading up, and my wife and I, we were about two or three weeks late to the party. But I watched the new Avengers and loved it, because that's what the movies should be. Because it was not a dull moment. It was almost 3 hours long, and it just never stopped.
Definitely. And dozens, for those of you who are listening, first off, if you haven't seen the movie already, that we're not going to spoil it, but I should, because you should have seen it already by now. That's all I'm saying. And you know, you haven't seen either of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies?
You know, I missed the first one when it came out, and then when the second one started rolling around, I was like, okay, I need to catch up and watch the first one, and then catch that one. And then I was on the fence, because I'm a fool, because I always make the same mistake, and my wife tells me about it all the time, because I'll see something come out, and I'm like, oh, I don't care about that, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, like, I remember the comic, yeah, all right, like, I don't care, yeah, I'm sure it's good, but whatever, and then I'll see, like, that happened with Thor Ragnarok. I was like, ah, whatever. And then I watched it, like, 3 weeks ago, and I was like, this is the best movie. I'm an idiot. Like, this is great. Yeah. So I'm sure I'll watch it and love it, because I know the second one's on Netflix now, so I'll probably get a hold of the first one and give it a watch.
If you definitely like Thor Ragnarok, I think you'll definitely enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy. So, and a lot of the way that they're – apparently the person who wrote Guardians of the Galaxy also wrote their lines in – in the most recent Avengers movie, so the pattern is very similar. So I think you'll love them. So okay, so let me circle back to a few things that you mentioned in the lightning round here. Now I can ask a little bit longer questions. So why? So you said you had.
I can calm down.
You said you had a story about why you left the first time. So you debuted pretty early, like, so 2005, I think you said. And then you left for a good number of years. So what caused you to leave for a little while? And then what gave you the urge to want to come back?
Well, I of course don't mind at all. I think it's important to keep your history out there, especially when you live through some stuff. But you know, I started training in 2004, and I had my first shows in 2004. I had my first match also on that card in 2005, where Jeff Jarrett, Abyss, and the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. So when I debuted in wrestling the first time, Dusty Rhodes was not only still alive, he was still wrestling. So I was very nervous. But, you know, I've always been, I guess, the guys, a lot of the kids nowadays call me the, you know, like the old school guy, I guess, which I think is debatable. But I guess by those terms, I've always been kind of an old school fan. And I grew up with the PWI magazines and all the black and white photos of NWA. For years and years, I only had WTBS to watch wrestling on as a kid. So I definitely grew up a WCW, NWA guy. So it meant a lot to me. So I kind of was fighting that urge because I think as a young man, I felt that I needed to fit into the mold of something else. If you remember back to 04, 05, 06, we're talking about that's when the indies had their big first surge, I guess, you know, since the territories died. So we're talking about like CM Punk and Chris Sabin and all the Ring of Honor had started up and all this stuff. So I kind of felt that I needed to fit into that mold, but I wasn't, that's not why I got into wrestling. So I spent a few years spinning my wheels, and I took to wrestling pretty quickly. My body was ready for it. I have a good mind for it. I kind of grew up around wrestling and at wrestling, my uncle's wrestling shows my whole life. So I think I got good at it pretty quickly, and I got the hang of it, the fundamentals, but my mind wasn't there, and I grew up, you know, very, very poor. I was a poor kid, and that kind of transitioned into my adulthood. So as I spent years, my first few years in wrestling, it got more and more difficult to get to shows and everything, and I was very frustrated because I wasn't doing wrestling the way that I didn't know it at the time, but I know now that I wasn't doing it like I wanted to do it. I was trying to be a Ring of Honor guy or a TNA guy, you know, just trying to make it, but I was doing it for the wrong reason. So I ended up getting frustrated, depressed, legitimately depressed, and had some problems. I was technically homeless for a good amount of time. I mean, I wasn't living out of a box, thankfully, but I didn't have a place to go. You know, I was out of money. I got really sick at one point, and I still don't know why. There was a match I was supposed to have. It was probably 2007 or 8, I can't remember. But I was living on a friend's couch, and it was probably the third or fourth friend's couch I lived on, you know, because you couldn't stay very long, someone would get mad. But I was just really struggling, and I got really sick. I was supposed to have a tag match with the Irish Airborne, if you remember. Now they are OVE. OVE. Yeah, Dave and Jake Crist. I was supposed to have a match with them, but I was so sick that my friend drove me to the emergency room, and I ended up missing a shot. And then I just kind of slowly faded away from there. I would make less and less shows. And then I kind of transitioned into some backstage stuff. I was helping produce and help write, put shows together, and doing commentary. And in my head, I thought, you know, it was a nice little dream you had, but wrestling's not for you, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just talked myself out of pursuing it. And I realize now, years later, you'll know. I'm a long-winded talker. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
I just keep going and going. But I found out years later, you know, through therapy and everything, which is one of the best things that ever happened to me, was it's just a fear of failure, you know. It just thinks you're not going to make it or something, or not going to be able to prove it to everybody, so you just sabotage yourself. And I think that's just partly what I did. But that led me into getting into theater. I've done since I left wrestling, I did about 30. I was a lead character, a lead role in over 30 plays and musicals, which I think is a substantial amount. And I studied at Second City in Chicago. I had, you know, hundreds of hours of private lessons with private coaches and stuff. So I really threw myself into acting. And it was through the Rocky Horror Show, which was my first musical. I never thought I'd do a musical, and I was so depressed because I loved Rocky Horror, and I'd seen Young Frankenstein, the musical. I always loved Mel Brooks, and I thought, man, I'm never going to do that. But I just went for it. I ended up getting cast in the lead role as Frankenfurter and met my wife, who was playing Janet. And we ended up being best friends for 5 or 6 years, and then we finally got together and got married. And she is the one who heard me talking about wrestling, and she could hear it in my voice, you know. And she was just like, so why aren't you doing it? And I was like, I tried it, didn't work out. It kind of chewed me up and spit me out type of thing. And she's like, no, it didn't. She's like, what are you doing? You know, you love it. Why aren't you doing it? Give me a good answer. And I didn't really have one. She's like, well, then do it. You love it. And I was like, yeah, I guess it is that easy. So I got on my, it was Thanksgiving Day, 2015. I got on my phone, I messaged Adam Johnson at Remix Pro Wrestling, and I said, this is a weird question, but how would you feel if I stepped back into the ring? Do you think you'd have any kind of spot for me? And he said, absolutely. How's April sound? That's, you know, the next show, how about April? I said, well, that's my birthday. And he's like, perfect, you're on. And I just never looked back.
So now, doing some research, I was looking at some older matches. When you first started out, and correct me if I'm wrong on this one here, you were pretty much just like serious business, black track jacket type of character going there. So it's very interesting that you mentioned kind of Rocky Horror Show, because I can see a little bit of that, you know, now obviously kind of putting two and two together. It looks like, and I could be wrong on this, you took a little bit of Frankenfurter maybe and brought that into what is now Magnum CK.
Well, that's exactly it. So theater opened up everything because, again, I've had some great people in my life, and I had my grandparents, my grandfather especially. He's the one who instilled the work ethic into me, and he always believed in me. And my uncle, like I said, he always encouraged me. But I didn't talk much about what I wanted to do and that I wanted to pursue wrestling. I was almost embarrassed by it because, you know, the way I grew up, you didn't really pursue your dreams. You know, you just kind of waited for the next hope for the next paycheck, and it was just kind of a depressing existence. And so I kind of hit all that. And I think that kind of came through with my original deal in wrestling. I thought, well, if I want to be taken seriously, I have to be a big, serious, boring, brute. And then I got out of that. I discovered theater, roles like Frankenfurter and countless others. I just exploded, man. Like my personality, I was just able to tap into all these things. And I learned. I was trained as an actor, I learned all these things, and I put my reps in, and I swear to you, it's more than 10,000 hours of acting and rehearsing. I mean, it's so much. And now when I came back to wrestling, when I came back for the second run here, the first match, I was so nervous, and then I did my entrance, and even the new gear I bought, that first set of gear, it was all black and white, really basic. I had no idea what my character was going to be. I just went back to the old standby, the old wrestling that I already knew. And I got in the ring, and I looked around. I was the first match on the card, and I looked around, and I was like, dude, you're an idiot. This is a stage. You're just on a square stage. It's theater in the round. They're all around you. This is just a play, you moron. Like, it's improv, and it's half scripted, and it's half, And then I was like, boom, all my nerves completely melted away. I totally got it. I started looking out into the audience, making eye contact with people, connecting with the crowd, and it's just been 100 miles an hour ever since then. And it took me a little while. I struggled around for about a year or so when I first came back. And I've told this story a couple times, but I'll just give you the quick version because I had a big show. I had a huge tag match. It was Devon Dudley was in it, and Marion Fontaine. We tore the house down. It was a blast. But I was sitting at dinner with my wife, and I was just feeling dejected. And she's like, what is wrong with you? Like, why aren't you happy about this? Like, what's wrong? I was like, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it. And I bounced a couple of ideas off of her, And she's like, just stop. And she's like, she put her fork down, and she just, like, looked at me, and she's like, all right, don't get mad at me, okay? And I was like, oh, geez, here we go. And she's like, who do you love in wrestling? And I, why do you do this? And I was like, well, Ric Flair, Andy Kaufman, Rick Rude, I named off 100 guys, Terry Funk, all these guys. And she's like, okay, So what do they do that you like so much? And I just kind of went off on all that and details and broader sense of like, this is how Ric Flair made me feel. And I liked when Rick Rude did this and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay, do that.
Yeah.
And I just was waiting for her to say more. And I was like, what do you mean, dude? Like, what? She's like, yeah, just do that. I mean, she's like, don't rip them off, but just whatever they did to make you feel that way, just do that for other people. And I was just like, it was like a eureka, like, oh my God, like, it's that simple. Like, okay. Like, she's not a wrestling fan. She's my outside perspective all the time. And I was like, that's pure genius. And she's like, yeah, that's right. You know.
Yeah.
And so I immediately, the next day, I started looking into how can I get some capes made. I want extravagant gear. I went all the way over the top. And you know, it's in the last 9 to 12 months is when I've started doing all that. And it's just been like, I've blown the roof off, man. Like, it's just been like it all a big epiphany. And it's all because of my wife.
And the funny part is, and like I said, I've been, you know, got to do a lot of research the last couple of days, kind of going through YouTube videos and the like to see. And it was really funny because I think that debut match of when you returned, where again, you're back doing the same thing. It's the black and white gear. You can definitely see even in that time frame, just watching videos from like, you know, February to current, it is an amazing transformation. It's been a lot of fun to kind of watch, even, you know, from all the way down here in Florida, since obviously you're mostly up in the north there. But then, like I said, coming up with ideas, like I got to watch this one bit you did it wasn't for AIW, if I remember correctly, but you did a game show called If You Wheel, which was hysterical. So that, and everybody go look that up. I think it's on Magnum's Facebook, or not Facebook, pardon me. It's on Magnum's YouTube page. So go look that one up. I'll try to link it if I remember to when I do the hype for it as well. So, but
that whole thing is just taking the next level of entertainment, because what I've come to think as I realized, I'm going to do it differently. So whereas before I thought, well, I want to be like CM Punk, or I need to be a Ring of Honor guy back then, or all that. That now I'm thinking, what's everyone doing? Okay. What are they not doing? I want to try to do that.
Right.
You know, so I'll literally sit backstage and watch the shows, and I'll adjust my match or adjust my thinking based on, okay, well, they did this and they did that and they did this. And I remember seeing that on the New Japan show. Okay, we got it. I'm going to do this. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to climb up to the second rope, try for an axe handle, and then get hit in the stomach and do a front flip like Ted DiBiase, because they haven't seen that in 20 years.
Right. And I don't know if, do you know about Effie at all? Have you heard of Effie?
Yeah, that sounds very familiar.
You'll need to look Effie up, because he's been a former guest on our show, but he's definitely becoming quite the name down here, especially in the South. As he dubbed himself on our own show, he's a big gay Stone Cold Steve Austin, which I think is a wonderful. But he's talked about a very similar thing, that he'll stop and look at the show and go, what's nobody else doing? Because what's everybody doing right now? Because I don't want to do any of that. I want to do whatever nobody else is doing on the show, just to, you know, because that's what's going to get noticed. It's like, you know, sure, I can do 8 million flips and the like, but we saw that eight times already today. So let's do something completely different.
So my wife sent me down this track, and I was fortunate enough to wrestle in front of William Regal and Gabe Sapolsky. You may have heard of these gentlemen.
Yeah, once or twice.
They just might have a future in this business. I don't know. Gabe said, I love the, you know, he gave me a ton, he sent me an email, and he gave me a ton of great feedback. You know, love the charisma, love the stagger cell, the Terry Funk type of thing, like, you know, great, 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 great character work, like great facial expressions, blah, blah. And he said, he put one note in there that I couldn't make sense of, until, of course, my wife had to tell me. But he said, believe it or not, I am a smart man. She has to tell me a lot of things, but I think I'm reasonably intelligent. But he put in there, he said, make sure that your in-ring presence and persona matches your great robe and entrance. And I was like, what? And I was like, what does that mean? And I was like racking my head. I was like, maybe he meant to send that to someone else. I was like, no, but he mentioned the robe. Like, I was the only one who had the robe. Like, what is he talking about? And my wife said, she's like, listen, you know, you're in the, because I'm in the wrestling bubble. You know, all of us wrestlers think inside the wrestling bubble.
Right.
And thank God for people like my wife. Because she said, no, what he's saying is, you know, you have this great, unique entrance. And you have this great robe. And it's all one of a kind and all that. But then the bell rings. And then you start acting like just every other wrestler. And I was like, oh, I think I, and of course, you know, there's a part of you that's like, am I? Like, you get a little defensive in your mind. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, yeah, she's right. Like, as soon as the bell rings, it's circle, lock up, take my arm, I'm going to slap my shoulder and scream about it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. So then I took that advice from Gabe that she unpacked for me, and I started taking this big, long, grand entrance and cape that I have, and using that in the ring, and taking more command of the ring, and I don't yell and scream all the time. I do facial expressions and body language so that when I do finally say something or yell, it's like, whoa, like, wow, you know, because some of these guys are out there, and that's fine. They're vocal the whole time, and they're yelling and screaming. But when I stand up after an elbow smash from the top and put my arms out and scream, are you not sports entertained? It means something. Because I haven't talked the whole time. I've just come out with my big slow entrance and made the William Regal frowny face at fans when they, you know, and all that, and trying to make people laugh. So that when I do come out. So anyway, long story short, too late. I make my in-ring style match the entrance, which is humongously flamboyant and theatrical.
So now I'm interested because we've got a great line of theater going through here, and I'm a theater geek myself. I've been doing theater since eighth grade. I still don't think I've been quite as many shows as you have, which is amazing because I've been doing it for, I think, a lot longer than you have. So I just turned 42. But what are some of the other shows? What are some of your other favorites? I mean, we've talked about Rocky Horror a little bit, and I definitely want to go back to that in a second. But what are some of the other shows that you've done that have kind of influenced you?
This was not exactly considered a classic, but I had gotten tickets in about 2009 or something to see Young Frankenstein, the Mel Brooks show. And I love Gene Wilder. I love that musical. It's so much fun, and it's just exactly what a Mel Brooks musical, on stage should be. And I thought, man, I've always wanted to play Frederick. And then a couple of years ago, I ended up getting cast as Frederick, and I got to do all my Gene Wilder type stuff, you know, and pay homage to one of my favorite actors of all time. So that one definitely has a special place in my heart. I got to play Felix in The Odd Couple, which was easily the most amount of lines I've ever had in my entire life. As you know, Neil Simon, he writes like a brick wall, you know.
Yes.
Like every line builds on top of the next and has to have. So it's funny because sometimes, you know, the guy I was with, he would change some of the words, and I don't know if he did it on purpose or an accident. So I'd have to be on my toes because he would change some of the lines, and I'd have to listen and then give the line a different way to match the way he said it. So Odd Couple's another one. I've done Hairspray twice. I don't think I need to do Hairspray again. But I enjoyed it. But you know how it is. You know, you spend 3 or 4 months sometimes working on a show, and then
yeah,
sometimes doing it again is like, okay, this is like half a year I've spent on one show.
Yeah.
But those are some that come to mind. I did even lesser known ones, like a little jukebox musical called All Shook Up. I got to play the Elvis type of role in that one. That one was a ton of fun. I played the boss, Mr. Hart, in 9 to 5. That was a blast because you just got to be a big heel.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah.
So, I mean, tons come to mind. You know, I kind of got away from plays for a little while just because so many musicals were auditioning. But I got to do Man of La Mancha not that long ago, and that
pretty
was
nice.
Total. They cast me as Pedro, so I got the whip, and that was a pro wrestling role. I mean, it is just cutting wrestling promos.
Yeah. So, and now for Rocky Horror Show being your first, and you got to play Frankenfurter, so you obviously have no issue with, tights was obviously already not an issue, we knew that, so that obviously makes fishnets not that big of a deal either. Did you have an issue with your wife being called a slut for the first time you ever got to meet her by an audience?
You know, it's funny, the guy who directed that that version. Well, they did put me in the 5-inch heels as well.
Nice.
They weren't all the platform Mary Janes either. Some of them were actual 5-inch high heels. So I, because I had, you know, 6 or 7 different outfits, but so I got to learn how to do that, and that's a unique experience.
Yeah.
But the guy who directed this particular version was a big fan of the Broadway revival. That was the version we were doing, the 2000-2001 revival.
Yeah.
And one of the big things with that revival is they had the audience doing the catcall stuff, you know,
right,
where they yell the stuff out. So he encouraged all that and sold the bags of stuff where people could throw, you know, throw all the stuff, the cards in the air and everything,
mm-hmm,
and the spoon, you know, all that. And so he encouraged all the yelling out. So it was actually a blast, but it was funny because I got so used to, because we did midnight showings. We did regular shows, and then we'd come circle back around and do a midnight showing. So they were just exhausting nights. But the midnight shows were always rowdier because everyone was probably drunk.
Yeah, gotcha.
And they yelled out a lot. So then you'd come in the next day to do the normal showtime, and I'd be pausing, waiting for people to yell stuff out, and then they didn't, and I was like, oh, wait, okay. So it's kind of a movie doesn't have to sit and wait for you to yell stuff out, but I'm sitting there trying to wait. But he gave me free rein. I got to break the fourth wall and talk with the audience, and if they were yelling too much, I could talk to them and react, you know. And that role was a life changer, because I went from just doing plays here and there and everything to playing the most flamboyant character, arguably, in all of theater.
Oh, gotcha.
And if I can say so myself, I positively nailed it. I mean, it was the first time in my life I ever said, I don't care what anyone thinks about me. I'm going to unleash something awesome, and I'm not going to hold back. And that's something I do a lot of directing now. And I tell that to actors all the time. I'm like, do not be afraid to look stupid, because the only time on stage that you ever look stupid is if you're afraid to look stupid.
Right.
Like, everyone you love in theater, they all are just going for it 110%. And that's why they're good at it.
Definitely.
So I didn't care what anyone thought about me dressing up like the sweet transvestite and all that, and I just went for it. And I've never had the chills like I did every night when I came out at the beginning of Sweet Transvestite. They had me come out of a sarcophagus type of thing. And I'd pop out with my big cape on, oddly enough, a big golden cape. And I, for one part of the song, I threw my arms up and the cape went flying, and like, it was like the Rock and Roll Express, man. Like, all the girls in the audience, probably some of the guys, you know, it was just the greatest reaction ever. So I ended up getting, for that run, because that show, even before we opened, meant so much to me. I got the heart boss tattoo on my left shoulder.
Very nice. Now I did Rocky Horror with my theater company back in D.C. We used to perform out of the bar district in D.C. called Adams Morgan, and we would do 10 o'clock shows. So similar to your midnight shows, people are probably half in the can on that one. The guy we had playing Frankenfurter was before the heels, 6'4", bald black gentleman. Who was absolutely spot on in the show, and he accidentally said, he mixed up a line one night, and one of the audience members tried to call him out on it, because of course they know the show back and forth.
Right.
And he slowly stepped up in 5-inch, you know, like 5-inch boots, so he's standing close to 7 feet, gets right in this guy's face and go, "Do I look like Tim fucking Curry? Does this look like a fucking movie? Well, then I'll say it however the fuck I want," and just went on with it. It was so good. But
that was similar, because I, you know, we were allowed to say whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing, because so I'm legitimately 6'4" as well. So in the heels, I was about 6'9".
Yeah.
But I had the similar experience. And then I had a reaction like that to someone who was yelling out, you know, during the crowd things. And it was fine. I just decided to mess with them. I told them to shut the F up, you know, or whatever, in rhythm with what they were saying. And it got such a big reaction, I just kept it every night, and they got a huge laugh, you know. So it's nice when you can do those shows where you get to play a little bit. It's not like Sondheim, where it's like, listen, you can't ad-lib because it's going to throw everything off, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, and the rest of you jabronis, it's Sean and Dave here.
Did you grow up on WWE and refuse to grow out of it? We have the show for you, Eat, Sleep, Podcast, Repeat.
Courtesy of FM99 WNOR, we are a weekly wrestling podcast.
Join us as we go over WWE news, programming, superstar interviews, and discuss topics and questions from you, the listener.
Including some really god-awful celebrity impressions.
Not that bad.
They're really bad, Dave. Find us on FM99.com under the Media tab and major podcast apps, including iTunes and SoundCloud. Just search ESPR.
Let me segue this, so we'll stop the theater cast for a little while here, but kind of not. Talk to us a little bit about the production.
It's the best. Obviously, I'm biased, but I positively love it. It's the brainchild of John Thorne from AIW, and it was another nail in my coffin, I suppose, of figuring out this whole character in this direction, because it wasn't. So I kind of was going full speed ahead and with all the charisma and just letting myself go and everything. And it wasn't until John contacted me about doing a theater type group that I realized I have almost 15 years of theater experience. Why am I not using that? And, you know, it's not to say that I have to play a character that's completely, you know, a theater geek or whatever, but just using all of that. And then that was another kind of aha moment where I was like, oh, wow, yeah. He saw me and saw a guy who has a ton of theater experience. Let's put him in this group of theater guys and start this new group. And I didn't even see it. So it's, again, I say this all the time as a director, and it's good advice for anybody, because I open up my shows for creativity when we're rehearsing, because I positively love the rehearsal process. I love the creating. I love making it. And 9 times out of 10, the best idea is, you know, like all these great bits and stuff in my shows that I direct, I don't come up with all of them. What happens is I create an environment where people are allowed to create, just like John Thorne does with AIW, right? So some actor inevitably will come up with a great idea or something that they just do spontaneously because I've given them enough freedom to do that. And I'll be like, boom, great idea. We're keeping that. That's fantastic. Or I'm approachable enough to where they can say, hey, I have this idea. And I always say, tell me every idea you have, because I'm just the director. I don't have to have every idea. I just have to recognize the good ones. So I think that that's important. So staying open to John's idea of doing this theatrical group, because originally the story goes, it wasn't supposed to be a group, because what happened was, at a Remix Pro Wrestling show, you just tell me if I'm going too long. At a Remix Pro Wrestling show, Chandler Biggins was very sick. And they thought he was going to die that night. And he pulled through a little bit, and he lasted a few more weeks before he passed. And anyhow, I just went up to John Thorne. I knew Chandler. I didn't know John. I'd never wrestled for AIW, and I never really pursued it. I knew Chandler, but Chandler and I just talked mostly about podcasts and stuff like that and old wrestling stuff. And I never wanted – he was my – you know, I felt weird trying to get booked through, you know, and it felt like he would be taking advantage of, you know, I just want to talk to him as a person. So I went up to John, and I talked to him for about 20 minutes. And I didn't mention wrestling one time. I didn't mention AIW a single time. I just went up to him as a person whose friend was possibly dying in the hospital, who I also knew. And we just talked for about 20 minutes. And I shook his hand, and I went to shake his hand, and he gave me a hug, and I left. Well, a couple of months go by. When I found out later through his podcast, actually, he mentioned that he said that night he didn't know what it would be, but I gotta have a spot for that guy. He hadn't even seen me really wrestle that much or anything. He just thought that's a good guy, which I appreciate very much. So a few months go by, I get a message out of the blue from John Thorne on Facebook, and he says, can you make these 4 dates? And it was a July, August, September, October date, 4 dates. And I said, yes, I can make all of them except July. And July was Absolution 12, the biggest show of the year, with Arn freaking Anderson, like one of my heroes. And I'm like, my hand is shaking because I've been waiting because I wanted to be in AIW so long. And I'm sending him this message thinking my whole career is going to end because I can't make one show. And he said, I have this idea. You're a big guy. Yeah, Frankie Flynn, he's doing a theater thing. Have you come in, kind of be his bodyguard type of guy. Now, I can't guarantee you'll wrestle on every show, but you'll probably be in a segment no matter what. And I was like, yes, but I can't make July. And he's like, Absolution? And I was like, yes, believe me, I feel like I'm going to throw up. But I had signed a contract with to do Hairspray. And they were paying me quite a bit, and I would have to pay all that back. You know, it'd be breach of contract. I couldn't do it. And I told him the situation, and he said, even better, because it's a theater thing. Tell you what, we'll make it work. So because I couldn't make Absolution, what they did was they put Derek and this guy named Colby, they put him, and they decided from that point on to make it a group. And then the next show I debuted, like surprise debut out of the crowd, and then it all went from there. So it was actually, again, it's a good testament to don't get too bummed out while you're in the middle of it, because everything always works out in the end. Because I thought, well, my career's over, my AIW chance is gone because I can't make Absolution, and it ended up being the best thing because now we have this great group.
So, and you mentioned Chandler Biggins. Obviously, we've got a couple things going on this coming weekend here, and they're both, I hate the fact that they're both memorial shows, but I love the fact that they're putting this much talent together to do this. One of them is the JT Lightning tournament, which you're involved with, or the J-Lit, as you hear it called a lot. And then they're doing a Chandler Biggins, looks like a Chandler Biggins tag team tournament coming up here. Talk a little bit about kind of both those shows and, you know, so people know a little bit more about them.
Well, you're right. It is a huge collection of talent. You know, you look at 24 guys in the J-Lit tournament. It's such a weird, eclectic, and awesome group of guys. And then the tag teams and the tag team tournament's the same thing. I keep saying, you know, leading into this thing, that to me, it's less about those guys and more about the two people that were keeping the memory alive for. And it was a crazy thing seeing that graphic come up, you know, the Chandler Biggins Memorial Tag Tournament. It was just like, it just all felt so, it was like reality kind of smacking you in the face. But Chandler Biggins, you know, he and John built AIW in Cleveland, and they built it up to what it is now. And they wouldn't never have been able to do that if JT Lightning hadn't come before them with Cleveland All Pro Wrestling. You know, I met JT when I was 8 years old. He had his first match for my uncle in 1994. And I didn't tell JT that for a long time. I wrestled for him at Cleveland All Pro, and it took me 3 or 4 shows before I finally told him who my uncle was, just because I didn't want to be that guy, you know, being like, hey, yeah, you know, you worked for my uncle. So when I did finally tell him, his face lit up like Christmas, man, like he was so happy. And because I just had so much respect for him, I just didn't want, I just wanted to wait for some reason. I don't know why, I just felt right. But so if you look at any city, you know, I'm sure even where you are, there's probably a top wrestling federation or maybe even two if you're lucky. And then a bunch of really kind of muddy ones, you know. So Cleveland All Pro was top notch, man. I loved it. It was a great organization. They brought in not only guys like Tracy Smothers and Chris Hamrick and all that, you know, but they would bring in, I remember seeing Brian Danielson on a show I was on, and Samoa Joe, you know, I think both times when they were Ring of Honor champion, and CM Punk was there a bunch of times, and Cesaro back when he was Claudio Castagnoli, you know, all these guys, he brought in amazing talent, and he created new talent. You may have heard of a gentleman named Johnny Gargano. He came through there, you know, and he's not the only one. So it's just somebody, I saw a quote today that said, 1,000 candles can be lit by one flame. And JT Lightning was that flame, man. I mean, he really loved wrestling. He ran thousands of shows. He lived it, breathed it. You could see it when you talked to him. And I'm one of the few guys on the tournament this year who had actually worked for him in the past. And so that means a lot to me. You know, I've always wanted to be a part of J-Lit, and when I got the invitation, I was super pumped. And to get to, on Saturday, I'll get to watch the Chandler Biggins tag tournament. And I'm looking forward to that, but it's just about, you know, these two guys dedicated their lives to pro wrestling, and what is that exactly? You know, it's entertaining people. I mean, you know, people can say what they want about promoters, and sure, in the past, I've met a lot of promoters that would, you know, they'd be loath to give you a bologna sandwich and a handshake, you know, let alone pay you. I've definitely met those guys, but there are a lot of them out there who they genuinely just want to put on a good product and entertain people, and it's not a cash grab. It's because they love it. That is the most noble pursuit, you know, as you are also a theater guy. Why do you do it? It's to entertain people. You don't know why. It's just in your blood. It's in your body. It's not, I mean, I guess it takes a certain amount of ego to take your shirt off and wrestle around and expect people to come watch and pay for it, or to put on makeup and sing a song and expect someone to pay for it. But it's less about ego, and it's more about, I feel like I was put on this earth to put together a wrestling show and entertain people, or become a wrestler and make people laugh and smile, or become an actor, you know, and entertain millions of people. It's just, it's a noble pursuit, and it's necessary as human beings. So what we've done is, if you think about it, I was saying this the other night, how many people pass away or pass on, and that's just it. You know, they don't leave anything behind. But now, someone like JT Lightning and someone like Chandler Biggins, they get to be remembered for the great things that they brought, not only Cleveland but the entire world. As now, a lot of their stuff's visible for the entire world. So it's about remembering two great people in entertainment, as far as I'm concerned.
Definitely. And tell everybody who your first round opponent is. Let's get that fun. Let's get that fun part out of the way.
Oh, Swago! I was so happy. Listen, I know these interviews sometimes it's, yeah, I'm gonna, golly gee, I'm gonna get the match of my life and come out on top. You know, and sometimes it's all inside baseball. But I can't help but smile when I think about Magic CK versus Swoggle, because I've only had one other match with Swoggle and we barely touched in it. I don't even know if we did. It was a three-way tag match. It was Jock Sampson and myself against Swoggle and Colt Cabana and Grado and Bubba Ray Dudley. So it was a weird group of folks, but
yeah,
we barely touched. I think I came in the ring, he ducked out of the way, I hit the corner, and Colt Cabana bit me on the butt, if I remember right.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So I've known Swoggle for a little while now, and of course through AIW, you know, backstage, he's someone I would gravitate to, just not only because he's a wealth of knowledge, because one thing I think people don't understand, and fans might not understand just because they see the character, is this guy has been around, man. I mean, he was a worldwide superstar with the WWE for how long, and came back at their Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, didn't miss a beat, was still over, you know. So this guy knows wrestling. He's a wrestler. He has a wrestling computer, man. I mean, he loves it, and he's very creative, and I consider myself decently creative as well. So when I think about the two of us sitting down and trying to bring some entertainment, some sports entertainment to the people, I'm very excited by that. So I didn't even know what my match was for Jay Lynn. I found out when everyone else did, and I kind of like it that way. But anytime I look down at my phone and I see AIW Wrestling has tagged you in a post, I'm always like, oh man, like I'm excited. I don't mind. I'm not one of those wrestlers who's too cool and doesn't get excited. I get pumped up. And I opened it and I looked at the photo and I saw myself and Swoggle, and I remember where I was standing. You know, it was like a flashbulb memory. And then I had to like close my eyes and look again, like, is that right? And I looked and I was like, oh man, that's perfect. Because when they announced me, of course I was pumped, and they announced Swoggle in the tournament last, I thought, well, I wonder who they're going to put with Swoggle. And I kind of had a couple ideas in my mind, and I just kind of dismissed it and moved on. And none of those ideas were me. But when, as soon as I saw the picture, I was like, oh, perfect.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that match. And what are some of the ways that we can see that? Is that going to be broadcast at one point? And how can other people see the show?
Well, you have a couple of ways actually, and I've used both, and they both work very well. So within very quick order, the show is available on SmartMark Video, and I do the downloads. I buy the downloads because then I can put it on my hard drive. I don't have to have a DVD or anything. But also Powerbomb TV, powerbomb.tv, they stream all the shows on there afterward too. They don't do the live stream because it's just the Wi-Fi situation is a little finicky. But yeah, Powerbomb TV and SmartMark Video, and like I said, they put their shows up fast.
Nice.
So if you can't get there for the weekend, which I recommend if you're within any kind of reasonable driving distance to get there, because it's just three shows over 2 days, and it's going to be an absolute party and positivity, and it's going to be a great time, then those are your best bets.
So now, we have a few questions that we end every episode with. One of them we lovingly refer to as the Trevin Adams Memorial Question. Even though Trevin isn't actually dead, it goes as thus. You have been a wrestler for quite a long time now, and like Uncle Bob Evans says, sometimes you got to do the drives. It's late at night. You are driving, let's say it's 2 o'clock in the morning. You are famished. You see a shining beacon coming over a hill as you're driving. You know you're about to pull over and get something good to eat. Is that shining beacon a Sheetz, or is that shining beacon a Wawa?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked this, but this is so controversial. But it is... Now, listen, first of all, any old port in a storm, okay?
Right.
But I will say, because I've eaten at some terrible places, and I've had to I've made the sacrifice more than once. But unequivocally, in my mind, Sheetz all the way.
And that is, in my opinion, the one and only correct answer. So,
yes, because, dude, made the winner, it's fresh. I don't care if it's 4 in the morning.
Right.
Oftentimes it is. Sheetz have saved my life because, you know, when you get tired sometimes, the best thing to do is grab something to eat.
Right.
It'll keep you awake, give you more energy. I've stopped and gotten made-to-order burritos and burgers and whatever else, and it's all fresh because you can customize it. They make it fresh. It's the best.
Absolutely. Sheetz, bar none above Wawa, to my normal co-host, Zach Romero, who is not here with us this week, you can suck it. Now on to our infamous final two questions. One of them obviously starts up a little on the dark side, but it kind of fits in with some of our conversation earlier today. In the performance art that we call professional wrestling, we tend to lose a lot of talent early. So with that being said, if you could bring anybody back to work with in a match, to learn from, you know, to do a segment with, who would that wrestler be and why?
That's a very tough question, but I currently in my mind, I'm torn between two people, but I'll just, cause I hate to be that person to be like, whoa, has to be these two. I'll pick one, but just so you know, it's a tough call because there are two people who are just a past who are absolutely top of my list of childhood heroes. But although I think my second pick, we might be able to get a better segment. My pick has to be the first wrestler death that ever really broke my heart. Because he was my favorite, Ravishing Rick Rude. To get to do a segment with Rick Rude would be amazing. But I can tell you my second pick if you want.
Please, go ahead.
My second pick, which I think would be a better segment because I think we're both nut jobs, would be Andy Kaufman. Because I don't know what we'd do, but it would probably be nuts.
Yeah. Two excellent choices, by the way, and I'm actually surprised. I have to think about if Rick Rude has come up recently, which is always an amazing choice that I'm sad more people don't immediately go to, because usually it's and don't get me wrong, the two picks that we normally get are excellent, but Eddie Guerrero and Macho Man Randy Savage tend to be like the top two, which are great choices. But yeah, there's definitely something to be said about Ravishing Rick Rude.
Well, the thing I always say about it is people always say, who's the best wrestler of all time? And that's subjective. I mean, there's a top 30 list of people, or maybe even 10 or 15 you could pick from. But I always think, who are my favorites? And Rick Rude's up at the top.
Question two. We here at the IndyCast believe that all animals in nature have certain traits to assist with their survival. Giraffes have long necks, rhinos have the big horns, etc., etc. We believe that the human's trait is the ability to use tools. So, with that being said, Magnum CK, if you could fight any animal, what animal would it be, and what weapon do you use?
Oh, that's a hard one, because I like animals. I don't want to fight an animal, but, because it's funny, I mean, I definitely eat meat. I just don't want to be the one to do it, you know?
Right.
But, let me think about that. My first thought that came to my mind is probably just a wrestler's brain was a bear.
Okay.
Because I think that all the legendary wrestling bears, and I think if I'm going to pick a tool, I have to go with the most, since I picked a wrestling animal and a bear, I have to go with the most devastating tool that a wrestler could ever use. I'm going to spin that wheel, make a deal, the coal miner's glove.
Nice. Wonderful double reference there with one of the I loved the idea for that match and was and have never been more sad to see a coal miner's glove come up than right then and there. What a wonderful idea for a match that was failed in execution. Good God.
And then, you know, at one point in the match, I'll grab a snake and pretend like it's biting me and pat it in the back.
There you go.
Screwed in my contract and all that. Yeah, yeah.
So, well, Magnum, this is your opportunity in a segment here that we have gotten permission from the man himself, one Mr. Brian Cage, to lovingly call Get Your Shit In. This is your opportunity for you to let the fans know where they can find your social media, where they can get your merchandise, anything like that. The floor, sir, is yours.
Well, don't fast forward this, listener, because I know myself, and I know you, and I know that's what people do. Because I'll make it quick. But Twitter and Instagram are at TheMagnumCK. TheMagnumCK. Twitter is my favorite. On Instagram, I post a lot of wrestling photos and stuff, but Twitter's the best. I like to talk to people. I'm a very sociology-minded person. I like to get to know people and talk to them and all that. But more importantly than all that, is a little website called shop.aiwrestling.com, because that's where you get your weekend passes for Jaylen, baby, selling those tickets on the IndyCast. But honestly, Twitter's the best. I would love to interact on there. Dozens of opportunities in my life and career have happened just because of Twitter. So let's hook it up on there, support everybody. I think the cool thing about wrestling right now and the big difference between my first time around to wrestling and now is there's a lot more positivity. I know the internet can be a dark, dirty place, you know, and Twitter can be rough, but there's a lot of positivity out there too, and I think fans are more a part of the show than ever, and I would love to see more positive interactions on Twitter. So let's have fun out there, guys.
Very nice, and everybody... well, first off, Magnum TK, thank you for being on. You are, by the way, officially, I don't know if I said it at the beginning, but I'll definitely say it at the end, you are the first guest of our official fifth season. So thank you for joining us and and opening up our fifth season with us, 5 years of the IndyCast. And to all of our dozens and dozens that listen on a regular basis, thank you once again for tuning in to the IndyCast. Until next time, everybody, I am, as always, Chad Allen. And as always, we say, deuces! By the way, stay tuned. We've got our fun little montage back at the end of it, and that's going to start right now.
Well, hope I don't poop today.
Oh God, just shove it in my face!
I'm ready to greet the day, you fucker.
Every single one of you guys has made a horrible decision.
It's that dirty ass Meryl Streep.
We're touching wieners. Touching wieners professionally.
What I am is a big queer Stone Cold Steve Austin.
So hey, Zach Romero, I bet you didn't know this. It's supposed to be a wrestling
podcast. Oh, is it? Oh, me, oh my.